Today's episode of Beyond the Mask is presented by the team at CRNA Financial Planning. Get a free consultation today to be guided through the complexities of investing and financial planning. Just visit crnafinancialplanning.com. Beyond the Mask is also sponsored by crnaeducation.com. CRNAs, you can get the CE credits you need by just going to crnaeducation.com. They have over 100 AANA prior approved credits, all four core CPC modules, and even over 40 pharmacology credits. No subscriptions, it's all online and mobile friendly. Just go to crnaeducation.com. And don't forget, listening to our podcast can earn you Class B credits. For more information on how you can submit them, check out our CE credit tab on our website, beyondthemaskpodcast.com. Welcome to the Beyond the Mask podcast. This is the Anesthesia Alchemy Edition, Terry and Gary Unplugged. Join hosts Gary Bridges and Terry Wicks as they deep dive into today's most important clinical conversations in a unique but educational way, in a humorous balance that only they can achieve. Let today's journey begin. Here are Terry and Gary with your next installment of Anesthesia Alchemy.
3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Anesthesia Alchemy, Terry and Gary Unplugged. I'm Terry Wicks, and as always, I am joined by the one and only effervescent, enthusiastic Gary Bridges. Gary, how's it going, man?
Hey Terry, I'm doing great. I'm always excited to dive into intriguing topics with you on our podcast here.
Boy, don't you know it. Don't you know it? Hey, and today's topic is really fascinating. You know, the world is changing so fast, and we're delving into the world of automated drug delivery systems and anesthesia care today. It's like the intersection of technology and healthcare, and it is and is going to be a real game changer.
Absolutely, Terry. You know, when we start getting into some of this stuff, it's going to revolutionize, obviously, everything that we do in anesthesia. Automated drug delivery systems, I think, you know, some people probably are just kind of thinking them on a basic scale. They have revolutionized with the advent of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And we're going to watch this landscape of anesthesia administration transform beyond what we've ever thought possible. You know, it's going to make procedures ultimately at the end of the day a lot more safer for the patient, as well as the precision will be way beyond humans, what humans can do. So, but before we dive in, let's give our listeners a little quick overview of what we mean by automated drug delivery systems.
Right. Oh, Gary. And here's the thing. Traditionally, and as long as you and I've been practicing anesthesia, we manually administer drugs during surgery or medical procedures. We picked the doses, we administered them, we watched for a change. Now, with the advent of automation, we're seeing the integration of technology to control drug doses, ensuring that the patients have optimal outcomes very, very precisely.
You know, Terry, it's like anesthesia meets the cutting edge technology. And, you know, quite honestly, being a techie, I love it. And, you know, Terry, it's not just about the convenience. These systems are really designed to enhance patient safety, as I said earlier, but they're going to definitely reduce human error and improve overall efficiency of anesthesia delivery.
Is this going to make our jobs easier? I'm all in favor of that. Doggone. You know, it's a revolutionary shift in the way we approach anesthesia care, and it is totally different from the way that you and I have traditionally done things. And it's probably for the betterment of patients and make practitioners more efficient. But we're going to explore the various automated drug delivery systems that are available right now, their advantages and their challenges, and what the future of this rapidly evolving field may bring to us.
Yeah, you know, Terry, if we remember back, I think it was Paul Santoro's year when he was AANA president around 2011, I think. And that was the advent of Johnson & Johnson Sedcys. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Everybody loved that idea. Yeah.
I think it was the only time in history the ASA and the AANA got together on one topic we could agree on. It's bad for business.
Yeah. Without a mediator.
Yeah, exactly. But all kidding aside, you know, we got some really neat content lined up for today's episode. So if you're a healthcare professional, a tech enthusiast, or just curious about the future of anesthesia care delivery, you're in for a treat today.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right. You know, too, when I think back a little bit, I mean, maybe it was 4 or 5 years ago, Kevin Driscoll, who was on the NBC RNA board with me, and I think you and he overlapped just a little bit.
Yes, we did.
Kevin came to us talking about machine learning and artificial intelligence and ChatGPT, and I looked around the room and I saw 11 faces go blank. So it was a leap for us then. But now machine learning and AI and automated infusion systems are really in the mainstream in many, many parts of the world. So anyway, buckle up, folks. This is Anesthesia Alchemy, Terry and Gary Unplugged episode titled Automated Drug Delivery Systems in Anesthesia Care. So let's get started. The landscape of anesthesia care is undergoing some incredible transformations, as we said, and changes in techniques and advancements in medical terminology and shifts in patient populations are making it more challenging than ever to manage anesthesia in a simple, fast, and most importantly, safe way.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Terry. You know, one of the key aspects we're exploring today is integration of the big buzzword that we're hearing out in the media now is artificial intelligence with anesthesia care. And I will tell you, industry is hot on this stuff right now. And how, you know, many of you listeners might be like, well, how is AI influencing how we're going to administer anesthesia and how will it actually impact patient outcomes?
Well, it's going to be a game changer, Gary. And here's the thing, folks. A broad spectrum of pharmacological actions are required during general anesthesia. As you know, we're mixing and matching. Balanced anesthesia brings a lot of different kinds of medications into the operating room. And so we're talking about managing analgesia, inducing hypnosis, and suppressing somatic and autonomic responses to noxious stimuli. Now, it's a delicate balance, and as technology advances, so does our ability to fine-tune those modalities to control those responses to noxious stimuli.
Absolutely, Terry. And you know, back with CEDSIS, that was really just propofol, one agent being administered by the automated systems. That has now changed. You know, the classic playbook of general anesthesia, opiates have been the go-to for managing nociception and anti-nociception balance. Short-acting hypnotics are widely used to titrate for hypnotic component of anesthesia, but the integration of AI, we're seeing a whole new dimension of how we're going to approach these pharmacological interventions as well as anesthesia care as it were in the past and is going to really be different moving into the future.
Yeah, you know, and it's a paradigm shift, Gary, because, you know, we've been able to, you know, ascertain with pretty good precision the concentration of volatile inhalation agents in the brain based on exhaled concentrations. But, you know, IV medications have always been just a little bit of a mystery. But now with target-controlled infusions, maybe that's changing. And so as we explore the implications of AI in anesthesia care, we're not just talking about convenience. We're talking about improved precision, reducing errors, and, you know, making things safer for our patients.
Yeah, Terry, you know, that's a great segue into the complexity of achieving the desired clinical effects in anesthesia. You know, I mean, our job is we always refer to it as an art. And, you know, it's not just about administering the dose of a drug. It's about hitting that sweet spot. Where is that therapeutic range for any given patient, that concentration? What's the precision site of action while minimizing all of the untoward or unwanted side effects that we sometimes perhaps maybe overshoot or undershoot when anesthesia providers are administering the anesthetic?
You're absolutely right. We want to hit the target, Gary. And in control engineering, particularly in dynamic systems, we come across the concept becoming increasingly relevant in anesthesia care, closed loop control. Now, for our listeners who might not be familiar with this term, and it's probably most everybody in our generation, closed loop control is essentially the management of a system's single or multiple output variables following a specific target value.
Absolutely, Tara. You know, it's like having real-time feedback mechanisms, constantly adjusting the system's inputs to maintain desired effects on the output. Applying this to an anesthetic means striving for stability in maintaining a specific pharmacological impact while steering clear of any of the oscillations, unintended side effects. You know, there's an author, I'm trying to, the name is kind of slipping, Gita, And they talk about closed loop control anesthesia. And that paper, I think, came out in 2020. And they have a nice little sort of diagram of total intravenous anesthesia by an anesthesia provider. And they show all the different drugs. They show EEG signals, ECG, EMG, and pain indexes and stuff. And all of those monitors are available today. You know, and it's a lot that we're looking at. We're trying to troubleshoot. You know, when the Bovi goes off on the patient, well, the EEG is not that accurate, right? You get a lot of noise. But that's the beauty of the new control systems, is that they use all the same technology, but they're constantly, every single parameter is being monitored for noise, and it will actually self-correct and self-adjust, which, when you think about it, is a little scary. And obviously, the question that's going to come up from people when we start moving forward is it going to replace anesthesia providers?
Yeah, that's a good well, you know, I'm going to retire in a couple of years, so I'm not worried. No, well, let's tie a ribbon around it, Gary. You know, you're absolutely, because you're talking about precision monitoring of a number of modalities that maybe even a human would struggle with. So, but in a system like we were talking about, a closed loop system, even when it's a clinician, even a manual titration of drug infusion by a clinician can be considered, you know, in a manner, a closed loop action in anesthesia. Now, the clinician is the human controller in the loop, monitoring and adapting actions in real time. However, as we all know, human control can have its limitations. Otherwise, we wouldn't need traffic lights, right?
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. So there are going to be intermittent and irregular actions over time that overshoot or undershoot, or maybe just miss the light completely.
Well, and that's where technology steps in, Terry. Computer-based closed-loop administration in anesthesia requires several really key components to that. It's not just the algorithms. There's, you know, a controlled variable representing various target therapeutic effects, which is, that's how the algorithms work in AI, is you have all these parameters that basically converge on a target effect that you're looking for. And then you're looking at clinically relevant set points or target values for whatever that variable may be, a certain heart rate, a certain level of sedation, pain management, etc. And that's where the control actuators, and in our case, the infusion pumps, start to drive the drug, and it'll start to slow it down, speed it up, based on all of that feedback from the patient's systems. You know, it's very precise, it's very stable, controlled algorithms. And nowadays, now I won't speak for the cars out in San Francisco that are autonomous. You know, they don't know what to do around a fire truck, but
that's right.
You know, this is I think this is going to be a big game changer. And you know, when we talk, we kind of joke a little bit about replacing anesthesia providers, given that we're now in the phase of artificial intelligence 2.0, started last month, and it's starting to take hold. You're going to start to see these technologies ramp up really fast and become extremely, extremely accurate. And so would it replace us? No, but it will mitigate the need. There will be somebody that will be standing there sort of troubleshooting, but it may not necessarily need to be a CRNA or an anesthesiologist. It could be sedation nurse. And that's where SEDSIS came in, but it just didn't have sort of the meat that these newer instruments are eventually going to be coming on the market next couple of years. There are a couple in Europe right now, and they are revolutionizing anesthesia care. And I, you know, I kind of paused for a minute to talk about the business side of it. 2011, when that stuff was coming through, we had enough people to provide. There was not really a shortage. Today, not only is there a shortage, but the cost of anesthesia services from a personnel perspective, if I have a choice between a pretty accurate machine that's going to be able to do multiple parameters with high accuracy, you know, and this is the rub, and that machine, let's just say it costs $250,000. If I put a few, it's going to work overtime, but it's no extra cost.
Never gets hungry.
Never gets hungry.
Has to go to the bathroom.
Doesn't need a break, right? Doesn't need benefits. Doesn't need retirement. So
doesn't cry at 3:15 to leave the room.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. What are we selling here?
So, you know, I think, you know, when these technologies start to get a little bit more palatable. You're going to see it fill a number of gaps, I think, within the next 5 to 7 years once they start hitting. Now, that is predicated on FDA certainly approving some of these systems.
Well, you don't think that, you know, political implications might make a difference in when that comes. But yeah, we digress. But, you know, Gary, one of the fascinating parts about this is not just the maintenance that comes with the various, you know, closed loop systems that are designed to, you know, manage the different steps in a dose response relationship. They can actually help you emerge from anesthesia. I mean, some of the articles that talk about target controlled infusions anticipate emergence, and maybe better than humans standing at the end of the table. So,
absolutely.
You know, when a system can control a specific set of doses or drug concentrations, you know, we call it a pharmacokinetic closed loop controller. But if the focus is on achieving a specific therapeutic effect, it falls under a pharmacodynamic closed loop system. So there's two different pieces of the puzzle there.
That's right.
Pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and it's really, it's like orchestrating a symphony of precision and anesthesia care, Terry. You know, today we're peeling back the layers of that closed loop control system in anesthesia. You know, we're going to look at some of the challenges, the advancements, you know, a little bit more details, and then the potential that it's really going to hold for, you know, the future. And I'm all about enhancing patient safety. You know, you look at the advent, you walk around operating rooms nowadays, and how many people are on devices, right? And perhaps it's not looking up the drug that you're administering, or...
You mean like semaglutide?
Semaglutide. That's right, yeah. Or what should my blood glucose be? Yeah.
Well, look, since we're already deep into this world of closed-loop control and anesthesia, this is my favorite, one of my favorite topics. Let's zero in on pharmacokinetic closed-loop systems. And we already hinted a little bit earlier about this, but let's talk about what it means when it comes to controlling inhaled anesthetics.
Yeah, Terry, you know, the ability to continuously measure expired concentration of the drugs is definitely a game changer. And it's already happening in Europe. Technology has come a long way when we're discussing specifically inhaled anesthetics like desflurane and sevoflurane. You know, now we have spectrometric gas analyzers and most anesthesia monitors. So it's back in the day, that was one per core, and it would revolve around, you know, the rooms. And so you were waiting a few minutes before it would come back again. So it allows clinicians to measure the concentrations real time. And so that's probably been one of the advents of watching this sort of automated technology start to happen. And so it's just going to get better.
Well, I remember when we got the SARA system at Triple Army Medical Center, I think it was a year or so after I got there in 1987. And we were so distracted by that. Every once in a while, they have to remind us, you know, the patient's still in front of you.
So that's right.
We're waiting for our, you know, feedback from, you know, our entitled CO2. And one of the nice things I liked about the SARA system is it also sampled exhaled nitrogen if it was in the system. That way you can detect an otherwise insidious air embolism. But yeah, that was revolutionary back in the day when I was first entering the profession. But you know, what's even more exciting is that we can leverage this data in closed loop systems. You know, imagine targeting a specific inspired or end-tidal concentration of a volatile inhalation agent and having such great precision. You know, and over the last few decades, there's been a surge in experimental control systems aiming at allowing us to achieve just that.
Yeah, that's true, Terry. You know, and here's something that actually not only caught my attention, but sort of been having my eye on was the commercial closed-loop circuit anesthesia ventilator called the Zeus. And that was released by Dräger Medical in Lübeck, Germany. And that's been out now for almost 10 years. And that machine takes things up a notch a little bit by targeting end-tidal concentrations automatically of inhaled anesthetics and controlling the fresh gas flow, you know, using the whole closed-loop technology. And so that system has been around for almost a decade now, and obviously the Germans are really advancing these types of technologies.
Well, they've always been a little technologically focused, haven't they? But you're right, Gary. It's fascinating. You know, we're witnessing the convergence of technology and medicine, and it's happening in real time in our lifetimes. But hey, let's shift gears just a little bit. Because while inhaled agents have been a primary focus, there's been some experimentation with measuring exhaled concentrations of intravenously given drugs like propofol. Now, that's pretty spiffy.
That's right, Terry. You know, experimental devices that actually measure exhaled concentrations from intravenously given propofol have been in the works, and Sedsys was one of those. But it's not, that was venous. But these ones are being aerosolized, and techniques like proton transfer mass spectrometers or Headspace solid phase microextraction coupled with gas chromatography and mass spectrometry, also known as small acronyms for those that like it, HS, SPME, GC-MS, have been tested.
Say that real fast 10 times.
And now let's not forget about the ion mobility spectrometry that's coupled with a multi-capillary column for pre-separation of the agents. Now that's a tongue twister in there, and I'm sure people
Well,
have
you
come.
know, I've got a couple of those coming to the house next week. We got them on special at Amazon Prime during the beginning of the semester. You know, the kids got a couple of them going. Yeah, look, you know, we're stepping into some high-tech detective work there, Gary. But there's a scoop for our listeners. While these measures for propofol exhaled concentrations are still experimental, and it's a little bit like a breathalyzer test. Hey, buddy, blow into this. Let's see if you're still conscious. There's an untapped potential there. And no closed-loop systems have been developed yet using this concentration as a control variable, but tomorrow's a new day.
Absolutely, you know, and it's a glimpse into the ongoing research and innovations in the field of anesthesia, Terry. You know, the quest for precision continues, and we're here to unravel those mysteries for the listeners here today. But let's talk about the controlled variable, the linchpin of these closed-loop systems. The accuracy of controlled drug administration hinges really on the robustness and the reliability of this variable. Of these types of systems. So when it comes to various drug actions, physiologic measures are really the go-to. Things like heart rate, respiratory rate, blood pressure, neuromuscular blockades. Those are just a few examples that are used to measure the effects of drugs directly.
Yeah, and those are familiar to us. Now, some of the earlier systems, like the IVAC titrator, I like the sound of that. The IVAC titrator controlling nitroprusside using blood pressure as the control variable totally makes sense. Those things were commercially available, but they, you know, have since been discontinued. But the idea is there. So the search for accurate measures continues, and researchers explore direct and surrogate measures. And we've used some proxies to measure or assess physiologic variables before.
Absolutely, Terry. You know, for, you know, the hypnotic component of anesthesia or balance between nociception and anti-nociception, surrogate measures are definitely a requirement, you know, like in electroencephalogram or EEG has proven to be valuable tools for measuring cerebral hypnotic states due to drug effects. Early closed-loop systems did use computerized EEG derivatives like spectral edge frequency or SEF and median frequency or MEF, which are really excellent tools when you get comfortable with them.
Yeah, and more familiarly, and more recently, we've seen the advent of advanced technologies like the bispectral index, or BIS as it's more commonly known, which have become popular controlled variables in multiple studies. And BIS integrates multiple EEG features, and it provides a more accurate indicator of the hypnotic component of anesthesia. But it doesn't stop there. You know, state and response entropy, two spectral entropy parameters based on EEG irregularities, have also been used to measure hypnotic drug effects during closed loop administration. Pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, this stuff is really fascinating. You know, and it doesn't end with EEGs. You know, some research groups actually have explored auditory evoked potentials, specifically the mid-latency auditory evoked potential, or MLEAP, as a control variable for closed-loop systems for propofol administration. And, you know, we use that all the time, that technology, when we're doing skull base or acoustic neuroma resections. Those types of technologies are already there. And so incorporating that into, you know, the closed loop controller, saying a little more propofol, a little bit less propofol. It's highly, highly accurate stuff.
Yeah, but now here's where it gets tricky, and this is, you know, something that, you know, humans battle with, but the key is the time lag in the system. You know, using a surrogate measures introduces delays, makes it a little bit more challenging for the controller, and different indices have different time lags to react to changes in the level of anesthesia. You know, we see this clinically, and it's true with these machines as well, but it adds a layer of complexity.
Yeah, that's right. That's the critical point, Terry. You know, when it comes to closed-loop administration of analgesics, for example, it's a whole different ballgame. Controlling the delicate balance between nociception and anti-nociception, it does pose some unique challenges. And so that feedback, and we know, we see that after giving a drug, even on the BIS, EEG waveform, there is a delay, and it's even a greater delay in the Masimo PSA technologies. So it's real.
And that's exactly the point. You know, while some studies have used EEG to co-administer propofol and opioids, they're still lacking an actual analgesia index in the closed loop system. You know, it's really hard to measure analgesia. So the pursuit of precision continues, and researchers are exploring measures like the composite variability index, or we like to say the CVI for those of us in the game, that are based on the variability in BIS and frontal electromyographic FEMG activity that predict movement during anesthesia, another proxy for depth of anesthesia.
Yeah, you know, and it's that quest for constant refinement. You know, the target variable is the clinician's chosen value that the closed loop system tries to aim or at least approach as closely as possible during maintenance of anesthesia. Now, the target variable is crucial for accuracy of the closed loop system. There are two set points that can be used, you know, and that's based on a population mean data analysis, and those based on individual data measurements at the start or just before the control period when we apply these technologies to the patient.
You know, that really is the fascinating dichotomy, Gary, because we're talking about, you know, should we use the population mean data, or, you know, what should be the average blood pressure of a 65-year-old man undergoing a laparoscopic cholecystectomy, or should we focus on this fine gentleman's individual data, knowing that he was just nervous as hell when he came in?
Absolutely.
You know, so that's the personalized set point, right? And it potentially aligns a little bit more closely with that patient's unique needs. So we do have to wrestle that. Do we use the population mean, or do we focus on the individual's data itself?
Yeah, you know, we had a grand rounds a few weeks ago when we had Sessler from Cleveland Clinic, who's an outcomes guru. And
David?
Yeah.
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 I know him.
And I'll tell you, so a lot of the studies that they're doing right now on mean arterial pressure, systolic, diastolic, and how much can you drop the pressure without having well, you know, at least a lot of their literature is focusing too much on, you know, MAP of 65 or less is probably not where we should be focusing our attention. It's that sweet spot is mean arterial, actually it was more systolic was the focus of his topic, but letting patients go up to 150 or 166 systolic, if it's not too far out of sort of a 20% threshold plus or minus of their baseline systolic, the reality is when you look at outcomes, it's not just that one, you know, variable that you need to be looking at. It's a whole conglomerate of variable. Now his talk was specific to cardiac patients, but it was a good eye opener because, you know, we're always don't let the pressure go 10% below the, you know, and maintain it at X, Y, and Z. And turns out that doesn't matter.
Hey, CRNAs, it's time to simplify your continuing education. Welcome to CRNAeducation.com, your trusted provider for CPC core modules and a plethora of Class A CE credits. You can explore 43 detailed articles covering various anesthesia topics, all from your favorite device, anytime, anywhere. And with over 40 pharmacology CE credits, meet your state board requirements effortlessly. Whether you need a few credits or everything to recertify, we have what you need. Just complete your credits online without any subscriptions or recurring charges. You can trust in our 100% CRNA-owned platform, established in 2011, ensuring you receive the best in customer service and educational content. Ready to learn? Go to crnaeducation.com, making continuing education easy and accessible. And don't forget that support is always a quick email or a text or phone call away. To sign up and learn more, just go to crnaeducation.com.
Let's dive in now into sort of the various control methods employed in closed-loop anesthesia. You know, in the early days, it was an on-off control was used, but the complexity of drug behavior led to severe oscillations, and it really did limit its overall effectiveness.
Yeah, and you know, and then came the proportional integral derivative, or PID control, as we like to call it, a mathematical approach that factors in the derivative of the observed error. Now, for you calculus folks out there, hang on to your hats. You know, it's expressed by a simple formula that includes constants through tuned through calculations, simulations, and trials.
Yeah, and you know, Terry, when the PID controls have been applied in well-controlled situations after fine-tuning, the complex dose-response relationship in drug administration can pose some challenges, you know, and it may be slow to establish control and might even cause what we call these oscillations, which makes it really difficult to interpret.
Yeah. And so to mitigate this complexity, you know, researchers had turned to the knowledge of pharmacokinetic dynamic behavior. And by incorporating these models, controllers can use specific plasma or effect site concentrations as the variable. And that is the key, the R in the formula. Instead of dosing rates, we're going to look at effect site concentrations. And that reduces the order of complexity in the resulting system. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely. You know, with modern microprocessors now, and most of these algorithms run on what's known as GPUs and not CPUs, they have opened up an entirely new set of possibilities, Terry, and what we're going to see in the future. More sophisticated models, because the computational limitations won't be there with the new processors, and it'll allow them to describe the dose-response relationship and incorporate or even alternative control algorithms like, you know, model predictive controls or fuzzy logic can be employed in some of these algorithms that are basically the meat of these new technologies.
I have an undergraduate minor degree in fuzzy logic that I think I got at the airliner in Iowa City. that might be a different topic. Anyway, but you're right, Gary. These closed-loop control can benefit from adaptive fine-tuning. You know, then there's various theoretical approaches that are being explored, including state estimation, mixed effects, pharmacokinetic or dynamic modeling using Bayesian estimations, Kalman filtering, fuzzy logic, our old friend, neural network applications. That makes sense. Yep. And reinforced learning.
Yeah, you know, again, it's that symphony of precision. Each method offers a unique tune to adapt to the specific characteristics of that individual patient themselves. You know, take Bayesian optimization, for instance, which combines personal information with prior statistical knowledge, and it adjusts those parameters over time for the patient while the drug is being infused or aerosolized.
Yep, absolutely, Gary. Reinforcement learning, a method rooted in goal-directed decision-making, shows promise, especially in biological applications characterized by inherent time delays between control actions and measuring their effects.
Yeah, and you know, it's really a testament to the ingenuity of researchers and clinicians, you know, in the field of anesthesia. You know, our listeners are in for a real treat, you know, as we continue through some of these control methods that are really going to shape the future of closed-loop systems.
No doubt. And so, listeners, whether you're a seasoned professional like Gary or, well, maybe even me, or just someone curious about evolving landscape of anesthesia technology today, stay with us because we're immersed in the complexities of closed-loop drug administration. And now, let's explore some real-world examples that showcase the evolution of this fascinating technology.
Absolutely, Terry. You know, one form of closed-loop control that we've been using for a while is human operated drug administration or patient controlled drug administration systems, PCA pumps, right? Patient controlled analgesia or patient controlled sedation, PCS. Those are excellent examples of older equipment, technologies that are getting ready to transform. You know, these systems allow patients set a continuous background infusion and then administer PRN doses, if you will, or additional doses as they need them. Postoperative PCA has been widely used for analgesics such as morphine, fentanyl. Tramadol is in the literature. I haven't seen it being used for tramadol, but there's all kinds of hydromorphone, you know, you name it, the whole gamut there for PCA.
You know, and these systems have been successful because they've increased patient satisfaction and they've actually introduced a level of safety by taking the clinicians a step back from the administration of those drugs. So that's been a beneficial thing. And research shows that in the postoperative pain setting, PCA with opioids can improve analgesia, as we said, and decrease the risk of pulmonary complications. Patients express a preference for this option, and certainly that makes sense. However, we have to have strict guidelines to avoid potential life-threatening side effects such as respiratory depression. And that can include things like continuous pulse oximetry and end-tidal CO2 monitoring on the floor, which are becoming more and more to the forefront.
Absolutely, Terry. You know, and let's remember, patient-controlled sedation, experimental devices for like propofol, PCS administration, they exist. And some are even incorporating target-controlled infusions or TCI technology to optimize the drug delivery of drugs like propofol, you know, and that's predominantly happening in Europe right now, but I bet it's going to start to emerge or reemerge again back in the United States.
Yeah, you can't build a wall high enough to keep technology out. That is for sure. So we're moving in, it sounds like, into fully automated drug delivery environments, and we've seen closed loop systems in perioperative care focusing on cardiovascular drugs, neuromuscular blocking agents, and early systems used hemodynamic alterations, but the availability of reliable cerebral drug effect monitors like EEG have paved the way for more advanced closed-loop delivery systems of drugs.
That's right. You know, EEG-based closed-loop delivery of hypnotic agents like propofol has been really a game changer, certainly in Europe. You know, we resisted it back in 2011, but these equipments are now a little more sophisticated and definitely a lot more accurate. So, you know, researchers have explored the various control variables that range from EEG median frequency, you know, to bispectral index, to density spectral array, you know, all these types of sort of parameters that now come with the newer EEG sedation monitors. And so they're being incorporated quite well and successfully with some of these newer technologies to titrate drugs at a little bit more accuracy.
Today's show is brought to you by the folks at CRNA Financial Planning, an independent consulting firm that offers financial planning services exclusively to CRNAs and their families. From planning for a child's future college expenses to building a predictable income stream in retirement, the firm is committed to offering you comprehensive financial services customized to fit your unique needs and objectives. If you have questions about your financial future, get them answered. Call the team at 855-304-3748. That's 855-304-3748. Or go online to crnafinancialplanning.com.
So let's just take a look at one example, and that's the work of Schwilden and Schüttler. How'd you like that? I pronounced that German, Schüttler.
Schüttler.
And these guys pioneered closed-loop administration of methohexital, or Brevetol, as we sometimes
I got hiccups.
Used it. Yeah. So I'm going to have a seizure. Propofol. Oh, my goodness gracious. We have to get regrounded here. So anyway, Schwilden and Schüttler pioneered closed-loop administration of methohexital, propofol, and Alfenta using EEG median frequency as the controlled variable. Now, Kenny and colleagues developed a PI-based closed-loop system for propofol administration using mid-latency evoked potential-derived index as the control variable. So yeah. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but Terry, you know, the real star in recent developments really is BIS. You know, researchers like Sakai Absalmon Kenny, and it's not Kenny that we're talking about, other the cartoon.
They didn't kill Kenny, did they?
Not yet.
Oh my gosh.
But you bring that technology here, they may. But oh, you know, this group has been exploring BIS-guided propofol closed loop delivery systems and incorporating various control systems like PID and PD, and even claiming complete PID control in some instances. So, wow. Lots of progress being made.
And these results have been pretty promising because these systems have shown better overall performance than manual administration. And they really do bolster hemodynamic stability, efficient drug administration and consumption. And of course, one of the things that we really do love about that is prompt recovery from the sedative hypnotic effects of these drugs.
Yeah, Terry, you know, and it's remarkable to see how these technologies now are transforming anesthesia care, you know, but it is important to note that ongoing debate, no surprise among researchers about the terminology and the methodology used in developing these devices, do emphasize the need for multidisciplinary team approaches without question. Data scientists and computer engineers that are putting these algorithms together, they don't know anything about physiology and pharmacology. And so it's incumbent that us as anesthesia providers have a stake and a say in the development of these technologies.
That's for sure. You know, and as we walk deeper and deeper into the intricacies of these closed loop systems, it becomes abundantly clear that, you know, the collaboration between medical and control engineering professionals is absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, simulation studies also play a vital role in refining these systems before they enter clinical practice. And, you know, that just makes sense. But as we continue our deep dive into closed loop drug administration, let's explore just a little bit the cutting edge developments that merge pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics, and adaptive control algorithms.
Yeah, that's a big one, Terry. You know, Struis and DeSmet, they took things to a new level by developing BIS-guided patient individualized model-based adaptive control systems. You know, and this innovative controller is rooted in pharmacodynamics and those types of models that are represented by something known as a sigmoidal Emax model. Say that 10 times.
I don't think I can. Hey, but here's the exciting part of all that, Gary, with your little sigmoidal Emax model. The initial patient-specific pharmacodynamic profile is automatically calculated during induction by correlating all the predicted effect site concentrations with the corresponding BIS value. So it sounds like it's calibrated on the spot to the patient. Using this kind of a pharmacodynamic model, the controller minimizes the difference between the measured and desired effect during the closed loop control. Sounds a little bit more precise to me.
Oh, yeah. You know, and the clinical acceptability for this closed loop control propofol administration, it was compared to standard practice control administration, and the results were a resounding positive outcome. You know, but Glass and Rempel, I think, they raised a valid question in an editorial in one of the publications on this topic. And, you know, they asked, could the controller be clinically acceptable outside of the actual study population that they were looking at? And so that's a big question, unanswered.
Well, it sounds to me like a simulation study needed to be conducted.
There you go.
And so they did. A stimulation study was conducted under extreme conditions, and surprisingly, the model-based controller exhibited no behavioral problems. So that's good. It even outperformed a previously published PID-controlled closed-loop system. So that's pretty reassuring.
Yeah, well, you know, in recognizing the limitations of the original model, DeSmet and Stuvis, they incorporated Bayesian optimization. Now, for those of you that don't know, Bayesian is this type of statistics that actually does mimic or analyze human behavior. And so they've optimized Bayesian statistics into the controller. And these estimated optimal modeling weights in the extensive simulation study that they incorporated stated that Bayesian-based BIS-guided closed-loop systems for propofol administration was safe enough for actual clinical testing on humans.
And by golly, clinical testing they did. And, you know, interesting, the system demonstrated better performance in the study guiding propofol administration during anesthesia for ambulatory gynecological procedures in an anesthesiologist, BIS guided, effect compartment control, propofol administration. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, and it's remarkable to see how these advancements, which are really within the last decade, they're not just theoretical, but they're actually being tested and proven to be worth it in real world scenarios. And it's crucial to acknowledge the continuous pursuit of refinement, Terry.
Absolutely, Gary. Now, listen, closed loop systems are designed for BIS guided isoflurane administration using a cascade structure and even a system using reinforcement learning, an intelligent system technique designed by Moore and Dufas. However, it's yet to be tested in clinical practice.
Yeah, Terry, you know, bringing up, so, you know, I think one of the questions probably our listeners are having is, well, if it's, how do you aerosolize, you know, propofol and rock your, you know, like muscle relaxants and all that stuff? And we know you can do it with opioids because there was a theater.
We're not going to say why we know that.
But, you know, there's an interesting article by Naz and Asghar, and they have an article. It's called Artificial Intelligence Looking into the Future. It was published in 2022, and I think it was around the January, March edition, somewhere around there. But one of the mechanisms that they do is they use nanotubules. So these are small little carbon tubules that they impregnate with the agents. And so they're able to aerosolize in that format. And these nanotubules will carry it across the lung tissue and then into the system. So fascinating, fascinating stuff. Wow. You know, here's another little glimpse into the future, Terry. You know, Inescu and colleagues, they described a model-based predictive control strategy. It's a little bit more advanced approach, you know, with a predictive forecasting horizon on the device. And that strategy allows adaptive model updates real time of the patient's pharmacodynamic profile, even detecting significant variable time delays and artifact. And this was done in the ICU setting. So as you can imagine, we brought up earlier, you know, the surgeon with the little fire stick in his hand, that tends to create a little bit of artifact on our monitors. Yeah. And so these devices have to be able to identify, is it artifact or is it real, particularly EEG or EKGs, because you don't want to miss VTAC.
One would think not. That's why we take ACLS, isn't it?
So yeah. Can,
oh, I think that's, doesn't that look like VTAC? Hang on, let me check my iPod.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, so, you know, here we are. I mean, exactly talking about the crossroads of innovation and practicality. You know, and as we conclude our exploration of closed loop delivery systems in anesthesia, it's pretty clear that the possibilities are vast and probably right on our horizon. But the journey to full integration into clinical practice is still ahead of us.
Absolutely, Terry. The feasibility of closed-loop technologies, it's been demonstrated under well-controlled research conditions now, and they're definitely showcasing their potential, you know, in the clinical realm. However, the next frontier is proving the safety and utility in dynamic and sometimes in an unpredictable clinical practice environments. And, you know, and the FDA has drawn a pretty hard stance on this, that, you know, no way will artificial intelligence and machine learning technologies be outside of the realm of a human basically supervising, you know, these technologies. And so while that is true, I think there's a lot of market forces that are going to push to get these devices into the clinical realm.
Yeah, sure. You know, there's a lot of challenges here, Gary, and, you know, clinical trials are going to show and real-world applications are going to be essential to validate these closed-loop systems and the promises that they hold for improved patient safety and increased efficiency in the operating room and making folks more alert post-operatively.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, limiting drug exposure when it's prudent and safe. You know, we just talked a couple of weeks ago about limiting drug exposure and reducing the incidence of delirium. And, you know, I think we'll have an opportunity in the very near future to talk about hypertension and myocardial and acute kidney injury that, you know, you hinted at a little bit earlier. So really, at the end of the day, it's going to be about ensuring better patient outcomes and enhancing clinicians' control over anesthesia administration and making things work better for everybody.
Yeah, and let's remember the role of adaptive intelligent computer systems with dual, You know, interacting closed loop systems, the question for clinicians is whether these systems will facilitate better control and improve overall outcomes, which everybody's focused on nowadays. So, you know, when they start to make it onto the marketplace, it'll be interesting to see.
And, you know, people are going to take a hard look at it. And, you know, it's going to be a crucial decision point. And as technology evolves and clinicians must carefully evaluate and determine the optimal integration of these intelligent systems into their practice, we're going to find out where the rubber meets the road.
You know, I was reading another article by, trying to remember the name of them. It was Al-Shawawa.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah. at Al. And this was in Pharmaceutics Journal. And again, going into sort of the focus on nanocarrier drug delivery systems. And so it's, you know, not just the equipment being, but also being able to transform our agents that we're actually administering in ways other than putting it in a syringe, you know, aerosolizing these types of things. So there are two different systems, one being the device that's administering and monitoring, and then the other is the actual agent itself. And these are starting to converge fairly quickly. But this article went into, again, a lot of how do you take nanotechnology that have drugs impregnated and then try to get it into the human body through other forms other than intravenously. And so that article also came out in 2022, which is just fascinating to see where the future is heading. Our journey through the intricacies today, certainly with closed-loop drug delivery systems, has only scratched the surface. You know, we're witnessing the dawn, as I said earlier, of a new era in anesthesia care with precision and adaptability, where they both come and converge on one another. And that is owed to the efficiency of the newer technologies that we're seeing in the computer industry, which is artificial intelligence 2.0, machine learning, neural networks. These are very, very sophisticated forms of technology that not only can get to an endpoint on a target for example, sedation, pain management, etc., but this is what's fascinating about artificial intelligence, specifically neural networks. When you build up a neural network model, the system eventually, when you make it complex enough, can actually go backwards, it's feed forwards, and then it will actually go backwards and do self-correction. And that's where you start to see where all this noise, like the Bovie, for example, the device will be able to tell, oh, that's Bovie, and then actually eliminate it and still be able to monitor and deliver the appropriate dosage to the patient. So fascinating stuff that's going to become a little scary, but it is definitely going to change what we do in the future.
Well, and you know, we in our careers, Gary, we have seen the evolution of technology change practice, and whether we're talking about automated blood pressure cuffs or you know, automatic end-tidal CO2 monitoring, or even things as a little bit more subtle as ST segment monitoring in real time in multiple EKG leads. You know, a thing that was unheard of 30 years ago have evolutionized anesthesia care and made it safer. So this is an exciting time. And, you know, whether you're a seasoned practitioner like Dr. Bridges and myself, or just a curious mind eager to understand what the future of anesthesia has got in store for us, stay tuned, because this is Anesthesia Alchemy, Terry and Gary Unplugged episode. Who knows what episode this is, but it's the precision promise, navigating the future of closed loop drug administration. And we're here for you.
Yeah. You know, again, you know, interesting topics like this, we really want to ask our listeners to make some suggestions, and we'll certainly dig up and try to put one of those episodes up that might be an interest to you. We enjoy doing this stuff, and you know, we learn along the way. We scratch some of the cobwebs off the brain and
knock a little dust off the controllers. <That's right.
laughs> It's not just Brevetol and morphine. there are new and sucks. Well, with that, we want to thank our listeners today for listening to this podcast. We hope you found it intriguing, interesting, maybe a little bit scary at times, depending on where this technology goes. But we did also include, if you go to the podcast webpage, there is a fairly exhaustive. Some of the articles that we've talked about, we have them up there on the reference page for your pleasure of pulling down and reading. Now, there is some mathematics in some of those that are sort of computer and engineering talk, but don't let that overwhelm you. Lots of good stuff. Yeah, don't be scared. But anyway, Terry, it's been a pleasure again. This has been another great episode on Anesthesia Alchemy, Terry and Gary Unplugged.
Yes, sir. Thank you for listening, folks, and we'll see you next time.
You bet. And don't forget, visit the podcast website, give us a like, thumbs up, and leave us some comments. And we'll see you on the next podcast.
Attention all certified nurse anesthetists, are you in need of a reliable and quality continuing education option? Well, look no further than CRNAeducation.com. We are an NBCRNA recognized provider, offering all four core CPC modules to meet your certification requirements. You can choose from more than 100 AANA prior approved Class A CE credits with 43 articles covering a wide range of anesthesia topics. Need pharmacology CE credits? Well, we've got you covered there as well, with over 40 pharmacology CE credits available. All credits are completed online and are mobile friendly. Choose articles worth 1, 2, or 3 credits. There's no subscriptions, no hidden fees, just the CE credits you need when you need them. Owned by CRNAs since 2011, you can trust in our commitment to your education. And customer service is always a quick email or phone call or even text away. To sign up and find out more about our education options, visit CRNAeducation.com, your partner in continuing education. That's CRNAeducation.com. Beyond the Mask is made possible by the team at CRNA Financial Planning. With almost 2 decades of experience, the firm guides CRNAs through the complexities of investing and financial planning. Schedule a free consultation today by calling 855-304-3748 or go online to crnafinancialplanning.com.
Hi, this is Jackie Rolls, president of the International Federation of Nurse Anesthetists and president and founder of Our Hearts, Your Hands, a global anesthesia support community that takes donations to allow nurse anesthetists in low and middle income countries to go to educational programs, buy equipment, or textbooks. Your donations are tax deductible, and we would appreciate your support.
Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you like to listen to shows. Also, be sure to check out BeyondTheMaskPodcast.com. Each episode is posted there with a corresponding blog post, and we timestamp important parts of the episode to help you quickly get to the content you're looking for. Also, check out the special series section on the site. You can follow along and catch up on the CRNA History Series, episodes specifically about political conversations in the industry, or try the CRNA Personal Finance Series. It's all on BeyondTheMaskPodcast.com. And if you have a question for the show or want to be a guest or even suggest a particular topic, fill out the contact form on the site or send an email directly to us at info@BeyondTheMaskPodcast.com. And lastly, let's take the conversation social. Check out our Beyond the Mask podcast Facebook page and Facebook group.